Hi, this is Kathy, and I'll be reading the Patriot Ledger for Wednesday, February 18th, 2026. MBTA Zoning Law. Quincy's first proposal, childcare, swim school, apartments. A franchisee of a nationwide childcare and early learning center hopes to build a three-story project in Quincy that combines childcare, a swim school, and apartments under one roof. But does the plan have enough parking for everything it wants to accomplish? The proposal from Quincy Learning RE LLC calls for demolishing the existing one-story building at 90 to 100 Columbia Street that holds President Press Inc. in. In its place, a three-story building would be constructed containing a location of the Learning Experience Child Care Center and a live-to-swim swim school on the first two floors and six apartments on the third floor. The building footprint would cover 11,000 square feet, but there would be 29,000 square feet of space in all. Kunal Rao, manager of the limited liability company, operates more than three dozen locations of the Learning Experience in Massachusetts, Virginia, and Texas. Architect Matthew Jarmel told the Quincy Planning Board on Wednesday, February 11th. Jarmel said Rao was by far the largest franchisee in the system. There are 17 locations of the Learning Experience open in Massachusetts, with three more locations preparing to open according to the website. Rao, who is based in Tennessee, is attached to LLCs for at least half of these locations, according to state records. Jarmel said he himself has designed more than 400 of the business's child care centers across the country. Additionally, Live to Swim has a location in Brookfield, Connecticut. This is Quincy's first proposal that takes advantage of new zoning rules that were passed in late 2023 to comply with the MBTA Communities Act, a law intended to boost housing production near public transportation and increase affordability. Per the law, Quincy had to create zoning that could allow for 11,752 units to be built, and it created two MBTA zoning overlay districts around the Quincy Adams T station and an area in North Quincy that covers the Abbey, office buildings, and parking lots. This project on Columbia Street would be one-third of a mile north of the Quincy Adams T station. The proposal calls for 25 parking spaces for all three of the uses, with two of them being accessible. Some planning board members and property abutters questioned whether that would be sufficient, particularly with the child care center. "I am a parent. My kids are older now, but I was that person dropping off and picking up," said Vivian Davari, who lives across the street from the property. "It was never an easy thing, even if you have parking spots. Sometimes it can get nasty with parents getting in and out trying to get to that spot." Davari, who already avoids Center Street because of the traffic that the corner Dunkin' Donuts attracts, added that she's concerned parents or caretakers will start parking on Columbia Street if there are no available parking spaces in the lot. The project is expected to generate 748 daily trips Monday through Friday, according to the traffic engineer. The majority of those trips are for the child care center, with roughly 300 trips onto and 300 trips off the property each weekday. The swim school would generate 108 daily weekday trips, and the six residential units would create 30 daily weekday trips. At a maximum, this location of the Learning Experience would be able to cater to as many as 154 children, although the state would have the final say as to the license capacity. That many children would require a staff of 25 adults, Jarmel said. When a planning board member asked the applicant's team to parse the number of staffers with the number of parking spaces available, Jarmel said many staffers at other locations carpool or take public transportation. "It's just the income level, the compensation that's given. Many of them don't have cars," he said. Jarmel noted that Rao envisions the apartments would be rented by people who work for either the child care center or swim school. When asked if criminal background checks would be run on any potential tenant, Jarmel said the team would look into whether it was legally feasible. There would be four two-bedroom apartments, one three-bedroom apartment, and one one-bedroom apartment, ranging from 967 square feet to 1,400 square feet. The apartments, swim school, and child care center would each have its own entrance. Further, the child care center is fully insulated from the other uses and would have its own stairwell and elevator. The apartments and swim school would share a stairwell and elevator. The second floor of the swim school is an observation deck from which parents and caregivers can watch lessons. The proposal was continued to the planning board meeting in April. The property is under agreement pending approval of the site plan and was listed for sale at $3.5 million. Gas bills could go up if petition is approved. Massachusetts residents' gas bills could increase by nearly 10% if a petition from the National Grid is approved. On January 16th, the National Grid filed a petition to increase its gas distribution rates so that it can generate $342 million in additional revenues. The request comes as affordability is a major issue in the state, with energy prices being one of the main drivers. In November, 21% of Massachusetts voters said that utilities were the single biggest strain on their household budget in a Suffolk University Boston Globe poll. At the State of the Commonwealth in January, Governor Maura Healey announced that the state would temporarily lower electricity and gas bills in February and March. But if the National Grid's request is approved by the State Department of Public Utilities, customers will see monthly increases in December. According to the National Grid and the Department of Public Utilities, a typical residential heating customer of the Boston Gas Company, which serves Greater Boston and Central Massachusetts, will see their monthly bill increase by $23.66, or 8.4% during the winter season. A typical customer of the Colonial Gas Company, which services some communities on the Cape and in the Merrimack Valley, will see their monthly bill increase $24.76, or 9.4%. Slightly different rate increases will apply to low-income heating and non-heating customers and typical non-heating customers, as well as commercial and industrial customers. The DPU said that utilities can file petitions to recover reasonable and prudent costs that have been incurred to provide safe and reliable service to its customers and have the opportunity to earn a fair and reasonable rate of return on prudently invested capital. The National Grid is hoping to use the increase in revenue to pay costs, including for new gas pipes, to recover charges from billing errors last year, and to address gas safety regulations and compliance. According to DPU, if the petition is approved, customers can expect rate increases effective December 1st. If you want to comment on the petition, you can submit emailed written comments to dpu.efiling@mass.gov, dpu2650.gridratecase@mass.gov, and rhumm@keeganwerlin.com by 5 p.m. on April 30th, 2026. There will also be 7 public hearings, March 18th in Lowell, March 23rd in North Quincy, March 26th in South Yarmouth, March 31st in Haverhill, April 6th in Lynn, April 9th in Acton, and April 15th in Boston. 5 things that you probably didn't know about Pembroke. Before being named for a town in Wales, what we now know as Pembroke, Massachusetts, was called Nemassikeesit by the Wampanoag and Massachusetts people. The word means place of much fish. The area's water resources, including the North River and Indian Head River, as well as numerous ponds, streams, and marshes, have been prized for centuries. Once part of Duxbury, Pembroke became incorporated in 1712. A little more than a century later, in 1820, a western section of town separated and became Hanson. Today, Pembroke has about 19,000 residents. Here are 5 things people might not know about Pembroke. A Boston Tea Party ship was built in town. In 1772, the brig Beaver was built by renowned shipbuilder Ichabod Thomas at the Brick Kiln Shipyard along the North River. Commissioned by Joseph Roch, the patriarch of a wealthy Nantucket Quaker family, the Beaver was originally a whaling ship. After delivering its whale oil shipment in London, Captain Hezekiah Coffin reluctantly agreed to transport 112 chests of tea from the British East India Company to Boston. The ship arrived at Griffin's Wharf on December 15, 1773, the last of 3 Tea Party ships. The following night, history was made when nearly 100 men disguising themselves as Native Americans boarded the three ships with axes and hatchets and destroyed 342 chests of British tea as thousands of spectators watched. Town's annual herring run is a spectator sport. Herring has played an important role for centuries in the Pembroke area, dating back to the Native Americans who built settlements along the waterways. Today, an annual herring run, which takes place each spring, is cause for local celebration. Herring Run Park at 149 Barker Street is an ideal spot to watch the herring's annual migration upstream to their spawning grounds. According to the North and South Rivers Water Association, the herrings start at Massachusetts Bay and swim up the North River for 12 miles on their way to Gorham Mill Pond, Oldham Pond, and Furnace Pond. At Herring Run Pond, some parts in the brook are only about 6 inches deep and a few feet wide, allowing ample opportunity to see the silvery blue or purple fish that are about a foot long. They often gather in large numbers to rest. Fishing is not permitted in Herring Run Park while the herring are running. A world-class music hub in an industrial park. Soundcheck Studios at 150 Corporate Park Drive has made a name for itself in the local, national, and international music scene. This intimate, well-equipped venue features performances by renowned musicians, as well as those just starting out. In its words, it's a rehearsal studio and live music venue created by musicians for musicians. From the main stage where the magic happens to its state-of-the-art rehearsal rooms, the spaces are designed to inspire creativity to ensure every practice session is a step toward greatness. Soundcheck Studios' open mic nights are legendary on the South Shore as they include a well-stocked bar and local food trucks. The nation's third oldest Quaker meeting house. Built in 1706 by local Quaker Robert Barker, the Friends Meeting House at Washington and Scoosit Streets, Routes 139 and 53, is the oldest surviving Quaker meeting house in Massachusetts and the third oldest in the United States. According to the Plymouth County Registry of Deeds, the unadorned wooden federal-style building was constructed where it stands, despite reports it was built in Scituate. The building has two doors, one for men and one for women, with the interior being divided in half, with women sitting on one side and men on the other. The meeting house served area Quakers until 1876. It's now under the stewardship of the Pembroke Historical Society and was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 2006. Link to the Bay Circuit Trail. There's a link to the Bay Circuit Trail, a scenic 230-plus-mile path starting in Newburyport and stretching along the coast south to Bay Farm in Duxbury between Hanson's Alton Smith Reserve and the J.J. Shepherd Memorial Forest in Pembroke at 483 Mattakeesett Street. The route continues past Great Sandy Bottom Pond and Little Sandy Bottom Pond to Tubbs Meadow at 139 Monroe Street, where it divides into two branches, north and south. White postmarkers help guide the way. Enjoy walking, jogging, and hiking along the trail, which is suitable for all ages. Black doll seen hanging from beads sparks outcry. Mardi Gras group is investigating incident. A Mardi Gras social group said it was investigating an incident on a float during its February 14th parade in which a black doll appeared to hang by the neck from a necklace of beads. Videos appear to show the doll hanging by its neck from a strand of beads as it was held alongside other necklaces waiting to be tossed into the crowd during the Crew of Tuck's parade. A young girl caught the doll attached to the beads at the parade, according to a social media post by the City of New Orleans. The Crew of Tuck's organization condemned the action following the parade, writing in a statement posted on social media that the behavior is intolerable and completely contrary to the beliefs and values that the Crew of Tucks holds. We intend to fully investigate this incident, and the responsible riders will no longer be permitted to have any association with the parade, the statement read. The leadership wishes this had been brought to our attention during the parade because it would have been addressed immediately. This was brought to our attention through social media, and we are immediately investigating. The organization added that it was offended by the behavior and would not tolerate it. Mardi Gras is a celebration of New Orleans and its diverse and rich culture, the statement read. We apologize for this racist display during our parade, and please know this is not who we are, and we will address this swiftly. As of this reporting, crew of Tux had not yet publicly identified which float and members were responsible for the map act. According to its website, Crew of Tux began in 1969 and is a 2,500-member parade organization with 50% men and 50% women. There is only one requirement for membership. You want to enjoy yourself, have a great time, and put on a magnificent show for the viewing crowd, the site reads. New Orleans Mayor Helena Moreno condemned the display in a statement on social media, calling it deeply offensive, unacceptable, and saying it has no place in our city. New Orleans is built on respect, diversity, and inclusion, and actions that seek to demean or intimidate any member of our community violate the very spirit of who we are, Moreno wrote. Our celebrations, particularly those where our children and families attend, should be spaces of joy and unity, not exposure to hateful or harmful imagery, she continued in the caption of the post. Members of the New Orleans City Council echoed Moreno's sentiment. Council President J.P. Morrell issued his own statement on social media, saying he and the mayor had jointly reached out to Tux leadership to ensure the responsible party is held accountable. What is depicted isn't free speech. It's a disturbing effigy meant to harm and intimidate families and children, Morrell wrote. This isn't acceptable, and no one is above accountability. The carnival season culminated with Mardi Gras on February 17th. Jackson remembered as trailblazer. Trump recalls civil rights leader as a force of nature like few others. Tributes poured in from both sides of the aisle after the Reverend Jesse Jackson's family announced the death of the civil rights leader February 17th. South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster, a Republican, promised on X to order flags over the state capitol lowered to half-staff to honor his legacy and memory of the native son and icon. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, a Democrat, said he was ordering flags lowered in honor of the adopted Chicagoan who broke down barriers, inspired generations, and kept hope alive. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson said on X that he was devastated. U.S. presidents current and past praised the charismatic movement builder. President Donald Trump made a lengthy statement on social media, saying he had known Jackson well for years and calling him a force of nature like few others. He was a good man with lots of personality, grit, and street smarts. He was very gregarious, someone who truly loved people, Trump said in a post on Truth Social. I provided office space for him and his Rainbow Coalition for years in the Trump building at 40 Wall Street, he noted, saying the men worked together on criminal justice reform, long-term funding for historically black colleges and universities, and economic opportunity zones. Former President Barack Obama and former First Lady Michelle Obama described the immense impact Jackson had on their lives. For more than 60 years, Reverend Jackson helped lead some of the most significant movements for change in human history. From organizing boycotts and sit-ins to registering millions of voters to advocating for freedom and democracy around the world, he was relentless in his belief that we are all children of God deserving of dignity and respect, the statement said. We stood on his shoulders. Former President Bill Clinton, in a statement, lauded Jackson for his service to humanity. The civil rights leaders organizing helped propel Clinton to the White House. We were friends for almost 50 years since we met in 1977 at the 20th anniversary of the integration of Little Rock Central High, he said. Hillary and I loved him very much. In 1997, Clinton named Jackson his special envoy for democracy and human rights in Africa. 3 years later, he awarded Jackson the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Reverend Jackson never stopped working for a better America with brighter tomorrows, Clinton said. Former President Joe Biden hailed Jackson as a man of God and of the people who was unafraid of the work to redeem the soul of our nation. Whether through impassioned words on the campaign trail or moments of quiet courage, Reverend Jackson influenced generations of Americans, Biden said on X. Reverend Jackson believed in his bones the promise of America, that we are all created equal in the image of God and deserve to be treated equally. Former Vice President Kamala Harris, in a statement, described Jackson as one of America's greatest patriots and recalled how, after years spent admiring his work, Jackson became a mentor and friend. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from New York, described Jackson as a legendary voice for the voiceless, powerful civil rights champion and trailblazer extraordinaire. For decades, while laboring in the vineyards of the community, he inspired us to keep hope alive in the struggle for liberty and justice for all, he said on X. We are thankful for the incredible service of Reverend Jesse Jackson to the nation and his profound sacrifice as the people's champion. May he forever rest in power. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s son and daughter both spoke up. Jackson was a close ally of King. Martin Luther King III and his wife, Andrea Waters King, praised Jackson as a towering voice and a devoted servant of justice. He walked with courage when the road was uncertain, spoke with conviction when the truth was inconvenient, and stood with the poor, the marginalized, and the forgotten when it was not popular to do so. His life was a testament to the power of faith in action, faith that justice could be won, that dignity belongs to every person, and that love must always have the final word, they said in a statement. May his memory be a wellspring of strength and courage for all who continue the sacred work to which he gave his life. As he so often reminded us, keep hope alive. The Reverend Bernice King said Jackson devoted his life to lifting people in poverty, the marginalized, and those pushed to society's edges. She continued on X, my family shares a long and meaningful history with him rooted in a shared commitment to justice and love. As we grieve, we give thanks for a life that pushed hope into weary places. May we honor his legacy by widening opportunity, uplifting the vulnerable, and building the beloved community. The NAACP, in a statement, lauded Jackson as a transformative leader whose life work is deeply woven into the history, mission, and enduring impact of our association and the nation, adding, Reverend Jackson's leadership in advancing voting rights, economic justice, and educational opportunity strengthened the very pillars of our community. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican from South Carolina, praised Jackson's long efforts to improve the country. I am sorry to hear of the passing of Reverend Jesse Jackson, a native of South Carolina, he said on X. He was a larger-than-life figure who passionately pushed for his causes, always striving to make America live up to its potential. He led a long and consequential life. Colbert says, CBS barred interview. Network wouldn't air talk with Texas candidate. CBS late-night show host Stephen Colbert said on February 16th that the network's lawyers barred him from airing an interview with Democratic Texas State Representative James Tallarico, who is running for his party's nomination for the U.S. Senate. Donald Trump's administration wants to silence anyone who says anything bad about Trump on TV because all Trump does is watch TV, Colbert said on the February 16th broadcast of The Late Show. The Republican-led FCC said last month that daytime and late-night TV talk shows are no longer considered bona fide news programs that are exempt from equal time rules that require them to give airtime to the views of opposing candidates. Colbert criticized FCC Chair Brendan Carr and the network's lawyers, saying they were unilaterally enforcing Carr's directive for purely financial reasons. Those words echoed the explanation Paramount provided when it announced in July that Colbert's program would go off the air in May as it was seeking approval from the Federal Communications Commission for its $8.4 billion merger with Skydance Media. Reuters and other outlets reported earlier this month that the FCC is opening an investigation into whether ABC's The View daytime talk show violated equal time rules for interviews with political candidates after an appearance by Tallarico. President Donald Trump has repeatedly pushed Carr to take action against broadcasters and criticized networks for what he views as one-sided coverage. Colbert posted the interview on the program's YouTube page, where it has about 2 million views as of 3 p.m. Eastern Time and millions more views on other platforms. CBS said in a statement that the decision followed legal guidance that the broadcast could trigger the FCC equal time rule for two other candidates, including Representative Jasmine Crockett, and presented options for how the equal time for other candidates could be fulfilled. CBS added the show decided to present the interview through its YouTube channel with on-air promotion on the broadcast rather than potentially providing the equal time options. Until January, talk shows were deemed to have qualified for the Equal Opportunities Exemption as genuine news interviews. Ever since the FCC Media Bureau granted an exemption to the interview portion of Jay Leno's The Tonight Show in 2006. Networks have relied on the ruling as a precedent for recent interviews with political candidates. Carr, Paramount, Skydance, and CBS did not respond to requests for comments on Colbert's remarks. The White House declined to comment. FCC Commissioner Ana Gomez, a Democrat, criticized CBS's decision not to air the interview, calling it censorship. She said the FCC has no lawful authority to pressure broadcasters for political purposes, and CBS has free speech rights to air the interview. This is yet another troubling example of corporate capitulation in the face of this administration's broader campaign to censor and control speech, Gomez said. It is no secret that Paramount, CBS's parent company, has regulatory matters before the government, but corporate interests cannot justify retreating from airing newsworthy content. Paramount Skydance is seeking to buy Warner Brothers Discovery. Carr faced bipartisan criticism after pressuring broadcasters to take ABC late-night talk show host Jimmy Kimmel off the air in September, warning they could face fines or loss of licenses, and said it's time for them to step up. Two major broadcasters said they would pull Kimmel off the air, and Disney briefly suspended Kimmel before restoring the show. In December, Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin told Carr, "You used your position within the federal government to take Jimmy Kimmel off the air in a clear attempt to chill free speech."